In a state known for big cities and big stretches of flat, productive farmland, a part of Ohio that we don't often give a lot of attention to is Appalachian Ohio. That eastern and southern part of the state accounts for 40% of the state's landmass, but only 17% of our population. And it's an area that's tough to economically thrive in. Today we're joined by a couple of folks who want to help fix that, revitalizing Appalachian Ohio today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Ohio is a great place to live, work, and raise a family. That said, not all parts of the state are maybe as great as others. Appalachian Ohio is a wonderful part of the state, but it's also an area with a lot of challenges. And today we're going to learn about that part of Ohio and the efforts to make life down there better. Our guests with us in the studio are Debbie Phillips. She is the CEO of Ohio Rural Action. Mike Jacoby is the president of the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. Debbie, Mike, welcome to Town Hall, Ohio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And my first big question, Appalachian or Appalachian?
I say Appalachian.
I say Appalachian, too.
So if I get it wrong, just look at me funny.
And, it probably depends on what part of the region you're from.
Okay.
So, you know, I think down in Gallipolis, people may say Appalachian a little bit more.
Well, let's start there, Debbie. Maybe give us an idea. When we say Appalachian Ohio, what region are we talking about roughly?
It really runs along the Ohio River Valley from Clermont County all the way up to Youngstown, basically. So it's the southeastern Ohio counties that are part of a larger Appalachian region.
And then how far into the state would you bring into that region?
Well, so that spreads into Ross County, Highland County, Muskingum County, Holmes County, Carroll County. So those are kind of the I'd say, western and northern borders of the region. And it's really the unglaciated part of the state. So we don't have the flat, fertile, you know, farm fields that a lot of the rest of Ohio has. We've got more of the hill country and the hardwood timber. And a lot of natural resources.
Give me an idea about the population density, a little bit of the demographics, if you will.
So, and Debbie, jump in whenever you want. But you know, there's actually our organization has a 25 county region, just because of the way that the population is located in labor markets, but. For the federal government's definition of the Appalachian region, that's a 32-county region. You look at the 32-county region, and as Debbie said, that extends up to Ashtabula County, so that technically touches Lake Erie. If you look at the total 32-county region, it's just over 2 million people. Now, the organization that I represent does not reach the far northern counties, the Youngstown area, and we don't reach the two counties closest to Cincinnati. Our region is just over a million people, so a huge amount, you know, half of that population in the Appalachian region is really in Northeast Ohio or close to Cincinnati.
So there's a lot of variety across the region. It's hard to talk about the Appalachian region in Ohio as if you're talking about one place. So Youngstown is technically in the Appalachian counties by the federal definition. And then we have Vinton County that has about 16,000 people living there. So there are really huge differences and variations across the region.
Was I right in describing the economy in Appalachian Ohio as maybe not flourishing like perhaps other parts of the state?
I think that's fair. I think that there, again, there's a lot of variation across the region. If you're talking about Appalachia generally, the larger Appalachian region, we have seen a long history of extractive resources where a lot of the wealth of the region has really been exported. So we've got some challenges that are significantly historically based, where it's a region that there's been a lot of land ownership from people outside the region and a lot of extractive industry. So there are really rich natural resources, really abundant natural resources, and great hardworking people. But a lot of the folks who've made money off of those resources aren't folks who like live there in the region. So we have some challenges with multi-generational poverty. We have challenges with limited access to capital for development projects, and limited access to philanthropic resources, given the wealth that really has come from the region.
I want to get into all of that a little bit more deeply. One more piece on the population. The stats I show say it's shrinking some, correct?
It has been, as quite honestly, a lot of kind of rural Ohio and rural America, smaller towns and rural areas have been losing population and suffering from aging population. And you know, something that we're wrestling with as a region is, you know, I used to live in Columbus and I go to Columbus frequently, and Columbus is just doing phenomenally well. The fastest growing major metro in the Midwest, you know, a finalist for the Amazon project. Just wonderful things happening. And the Urban Land Institute recently said that Columbus is supposed to gain 600,000 people by 2050. If you look at projections for Ohio's growth, it's only going to be 110,000 people in that same time period. So, and the birth rate is really not consequential. So really that means they're predicting about 500,000 Ohioans will leave other parts of Ohio and head to central Ohio. And so this is one of the challenges that makes our work really important, is because I came from a small town. My parents are still in a small town. I live in a small town. I'd like to see our quality of life, our way of living, our communities remain vibrant and sustainable. And if my kids want to, you know, stay in a small town, I'd like them to have that opportunity.
It's really challenging for young people to find opportunities, even if they want to stay in the region. It is a really, really tough situation if you're looking for a job. A lot of young people end up leaving to find opportunities and pursue their careers. And we've just seen that impact. And there are people who want to stay, right? So efforts that can coordinate with economic development, with higher education, developing internships, there are strategies that we are trying to develop and employ to help people who want to stay in the region be able to stay. But it's tough. People are making tough choices to just figure out what their career is going to look like.
Yeah, the stat I saw, about a 2% decline in population in that region between 2010 and 2016, while the rest of Ohio grew by 1.2%. So as Mike pointed out, they may be staying in Ohio, but they're not staying in Appalachian counties. Talk to us, Debbie, a little bit about median incomes, household incomes. How does that part of the state stack up with the rest of Ohio?
I think in a lot of places it's lower. I also think that we have a pretty high quality of life and things are fairly affordable. So there are some trade-offs.
And you know, and I looked at some numbers before this program, and I'm showing that the poverty rate is 19.2% in our counties, the APEG counties. That's 25% than the Ohio average. The per capita income is almost $22,000 in the APEG region. In the rest of Ohio, it's almost $28,000. So it's 21% lower in the APEG region than the rest of Ohio. And our unemployment rates are about a third higher than the rest of the country.
So I kind of feel like all I've talked about is, wow, it's horrible over there. And it's not, and that's why we're here. But let's get to that. Debbie started this, but Mike, we'll come to you first. The social aspects of living in Appalachia and the attractiveness of the region as a place to raise a family. Talk a little bit about that. You were telling me before we went on the air, you've lived there pretty much your whole life.
Yeah. And And so when I went off to college, I convinced myself I was headed to some big city and never coming back, you know? And I thought that way for a while. And I lived in Columbus for 4 years. And Columbus is a wonderful city. I had a great time in Columbus. But at the point, I was married and thinking about having kids. I had been other places. I really appreciated the lifestyle that I grew up in. And I wanted to come back. And I was fortunate that I had the opportunity to come back. And when I lived in, you know, my hometown in Marietta, you know, we had an old house downtown, and I could walk to work. I could walk out to go out to dinner. We could walk to church. You know, we could walk everywhere. And there are many nights we didn't lock the door, and we knew our neighbors, and we got involved in the community. And it was just a wonderful environment, you know, kind of a Mayberry atmosphere. And you can still have that. And there are probably places in big cities you can have that too. But for what we wanted, and I married a Cleveland girl, and she's, you know, she's very happy, I think.
a whole different show.
In Appalachian, Ohio. And it's, the people are genuine. There's a good quality life. There are some opportunities, but you have to work real hard for them.
You do. And I think we have to make those opportunities ourselves in a lot of times. I think in rural places, a lot of economic development is homegrown. Like, we have to develop things and create those opportunities in the community. I want to share two stories about quality of life. One, you know, living in a town where people know each other, when my son had his first girlfriend, I got phone calls from people who were like, hey, they're walking around holding hands. And, it, you know, it might have been a little rough on the kids, but I like being part of a community where people know each other and they're looking out for each other's kids.
Yeah, who needs monitoring software?
So, like, that is really wonderful. You can, you know, walk to the pool, walk to the library, walk to school, all of that stuff. Those opportunities were there for our kids growing up, and I really appreciate that. We also have some world-class outdoor rec opportunities. There are people who come to the Hocking Hills region. We are engaged with many partners in an endeavor to develop a world-class mountain bike trail system in the Wayne National Forest. There are some really high-level quality of life opportunities in our region that people travel to the area to experience. So I think if we can have a better investment in broadband, so that we have access to global markets from within our community. There are a lot of people who have more flexible work environments now who would love to live in a place that is as beautiful as southern and southeastern Ohio, and still, if they are able to connect and communicate with the rest of the world.
So we haven't really even introduced folks to the organizations that you represent. We'll do that after the break, but real quick, if folks want to learn more about Rural Action, I assume you have a website.
Ruralaction.org.
And Mike, how about APEG?
www.apeg.com.
We are talking about Appalachian, Ohio, and some of the opportunities and challenges that exist in that large piece of the Buckeye State. We'll talk more with Debbie Phillips of Ohio Rural Action and Mike Jacoby of APEG when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
Started moving out, sick and tired of living from hand to mouth, but praying diamonds come from gold. Appalachian hilltop rolling, gather your seeds to be sown. Appalachian hilltop, welcome me home.
Our subject is Appalachian, Ohio. Debbie Phillips, CEO of Ohio Rural Action, in the room with us, as is Mike Jacoby. He is the president of the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. Mike, tell us about APEG.
Well, we're a fairly young organization, about 6 years old. The reason we exist is that Governor Kasich privatized economic development efforts in Ohio, and he did away with the Ohio Department of Development, and he was instrumental in the creation of a private entity called Jobs Ohio, Jobs Ohio leases the state liquor franchise, so they essentially run the hard liquor business, the distribution, and they actually own the liquor and provide it to stores on consignment. There's enough money generated from that enterprise to fund economic development, but Jobs Ohio is in Columbus, and so they work through six regional partners. Every other part of the state is really kind of a metro area where the regional partners work. There's no metro area in Southeast Ohio. So Jobs Ohio encouraged our organization to form, and they very graciously fund us. We're an economic development organization. We focus on business retention expansion, business attraction. We do site selection work, and we access the Jobs Ohio incentive programs to work with companies that may be in a position to create new capital investments and create jobs.
Debbie, what's Ohio Rural Action?
So we are a private nonprofit. We're 501c3. We work in most of southeastern Ohio, a little bit in West Virginia, and we do some work in other parts of the state. Our mission really is to develop the region's assets in ways that are economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable. We take an approach that is developed around the concept of asset-based community development. And the work really came out of the region from folks who had been engaged in, kind of more activist kind of responses to challenges in the community. And the folks after a time started feeling like there will always be fights to fight, and instead we'd like to focus on what we want for our community and what we want for our region and try to develop a vision that's based on our assets. So we try to work with people in local communities to look around and see what we have that can be developed in a way that helps bring some wealth into the region in a way that's going to have longer term sustainability for the people.
So one of my jobs here, besides hosting Town Hall Ohio, is I do media relations. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, the phone started ringing from the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal trying to understand rural America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be safe to say that Appalachian counties of the state are probably at least pictured by many as Trump Central. This is where the president's base is. Mike, talk about the politics in eastern and southeastern Ohio. What do you see there?
Okay, so that's a really big question.
But I'm going to give you 30 seconds to answer it. I'm not asking you to defend the president.
So
I want the reality of what the politics is like in that part
of
the state.
Well, the reality is this is a region that for decades now has essentially been kicked in the teeth by the invisible hand of the market. I should say punched in the mouth by the invisible hand of the market. And a huge part of our gross regional product is associated with mining. For a long time, it was coal, and then the power plants that go along with that. Manufacturing was a big part of it, still is a big part of it. But the reality is a lot of those coal mining jobs, which tended to be some of the best jobs in the region, are gone. I don't know that they're coming back.
They haven't been replaced.
Yeah, they have not been replaced, and they're not coming back. And now we're shutting down a lot of coal-fired power plants. It's been going on for a long time. Those were also some of the best jobs in the region. Adams County just this year had two coal-fired power plants shut down. Adams County is one of the very poorest counties in the state, probably the poorest county
now,
in the state.
Now, AEP's got a proposal to put 400 megawatts of solar right next door. So hopefully some of those guys can get some of those jobs.
But back to the politics, what you're saying is the economy has driven the way, at least now, people are perceiving who they want to lead.
I do want to jump in there a little bit because I think that a lot of people kind of glommed onto J.D. Vance's book when that came out as if it somehow explained what happened in the 2016 election. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, him sharing like his personal story and memoir is one thing, but trying to speak in terms of policy and trying to speak for the region, I think he was in over his head. And I think that it's a much more complex story. So there are areas within the Appalachian counties that I think people are more what folks used to call like a Reagan Democrat There are folks who've been conservative on social issues, but very concerned about labor and what affects working people in the region. And so people have tended to shift politically over time in those counties. And, you know, frankly, I think that there were folks here who were hopeful that there was a way to bring back some of those legacy jobs. There is now, I think, more attention across the country around the concept of a just transition as the nation's energy economy shifts to try to take care of the people who've been affected by this change.
So what you're saying is anyone who wants to label an entire region with one single label is wrong.
Yeah.
I wouldn't try to do it, and I've built my career there.
We'll be back to talk about more of the challenges and opportunities in southeastern and eastern Ohio as we continue our visit with Mike Jacoby of the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth, Debbie Phillips of Ohio Rural Action. Debbie Phillips is with Ohio Rural Action. Mike Jacoby is with the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. And we're talking about eastern and southeastern Ohio and some of the challenges and opportunities. Mike was talking before the break there about the expansiveness of the coal industry, how it has faded, and there's been a direct economic and social impact across all of Appalachian Ohio. The extraction industries, coal and others, Debbie, talk a little bit about the environmental impacts in that region of the state and what's transpired and what maybe is trying to go back and fix errors of the past.
So before 1977, the coal mining that was done wasn't really regulated. So a lot of the environmental impacts that we see in the region are pre-regulatory mining impacts. There's been a lot better attention paid toward restoration and mitigation of mining as it goes along since then. But if you've driven around southern Ohio, you've seen some orange streams. And a lot of that is because there's acid mine drainage coming out of mines that were not restored that and it mobilizes a lot of the metals in the stream. So we've got that. And there also still are some mine openings and some high walls that could pose safety hazards for people. So there's a lot of work to address some of the impacts of things that happened before the regulations were in place. We have a long-running program of doing watershed restoration work, partnering with Office of Surface Mining, ODNR, and EPA to address some of those legacy issues. And we have a new project underway that we're excited about because we think it has some economic development potential. Some of these things are expensive to treat, and that's going to go on for a long time. But we have partnered with I'm getting the signal that I need to wind it up. We have an art professor and an engineer that we're working with on a way to extract the pigment from this acid-laden water. And we are partnering with Gamblin that makes artist paint so that we will have a revenue stream that pays for the ongoing mitigation and hopefully employ some people along the way. So trying again to take something that's going on and figure out how to define that as an asset and a way that we can create some opportunity.
And we want to talk some more about some of those new opportunities. But Mike, you and Debbie have both painted the picture of a wonderful part of the state where if you could get some better paying jobs, you'd probably see an economic and social turnaround. So as you're talking to potential site selectors, whether they're already in Ohio or coming to Ohio, talk about some of the benefits of doing business in Appalachia.
And there's a really good story here. So I know we spent the first part of this talking about problems, but we've got tremendous opportunity and we've got some wonderful things happening right now. In our region, yes, we're rural, but we've got 33 Fortune 500 companies that either have manufacturing, distribution, or back office or energy facilities in our region. We've got 46 foreign-owned facilities. So we're a credible, proven marketplace. And a lot of the plant managers we talk with, they will tell you that our workforce is reliable, productive, hardworking. They will outperform sister plants in other parts of the country. our workforce story is wonderful. And actually, a real asset we have is that it's a double-edged sword. One out of five of our workers are leaving the region every single day to go to a metro area outside the region to go to work. In some cases, that's a one-hour commute one way. In some cases, that's 2 hours or more one way. So a huge amount of our workforce leaves the region every day. In the, you know, we've got 49-year low unemployment right now. It's the biggest issue in economic development right now. Where can you find workers? We have the workers that would much rather work closer to home if they were given the opportunity for comparable employment. I think anybody would agree. It's crazy to spend that much time in your car or your truck if you can work closer to home.
I also think we have institutions of higher education who are very interested in working with employers and responsive to their needs. So, you know, one of the things that's important for businesses when they're thinking about site selection is workforce and training programs and the pipeline. And there are colleges and universities who are willing to work with folks to develop programs that are going to be pretty tailored to what they're looking for. So we've got space, we've got workforce, and we have institutions that are willing to be partners in training and preparing people for particular industries.
I would imagine that the access to affordable energy is a big attraction too with the shale oil play.
Yeah, so I haven't even talked about yet. But there's $64 billion of investment tied to shale energy in Ohio in the last, I want to say, about 7 or 8 years. And we currently are producing more natural gas than we know what to do with. We can't pipe it all out right now. So we're actually at a discount to Henry Hub prices. So our gas is some of the cheapest in really the world. And between the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and the Utica Shale in Ohio, our region is producing 40% of the natural gas in the country.
So if I'm going to run a big plant and I need energy, that's why I'm going to consider South and Eastern Ohio.
Correct.
We'll talk more about some of the economic development opportunities in Appalachian Ohio as we continue our conversation with Debbie Phillips and Mike Jacoby next on Town Hall Ohio. Welcome back to Town Hall Ohio. We're talking Appalachia and market development, economic development in that part of the world. Debbie Phillips, the CEO of Ohio Rural Action, Mike Jacoby, president of the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. We were talking about some of the energy attractions to Eastern Ohio. Mike, talk about the location, logistics, transportation. That almost seems counterintuitive when I think of some of the back roads and Southeastern Ohio I've driven. It doesn't sound like it's easy to get in and out, but in reality, lots of transportation opportunities that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got, you know, two interstate highways, multiple four-lane highways. We've got two Class 1 railroads and several short-line railroads. And then we've got the Ohio River for shipping on barges. And really, from our region, you're within a day's truck drive, like the rest of Ohio, of most Midwest and East Coast markets.
And Debbie, follow up to, I think maybe both of you touched on this. So you've got all of this, you've got a great workforce, you've got the infrastructure and transportation access that you need, you've got low-cost energy. All of that adds up to something that I would think would be attractive in terms of the overall cost of operations for industries. If they want to set up a manufacturing plant or whatever, you can do business fairly inexpensively in that part of the world.
I think that's true. I think that we have infrastructure challenges still in the region as well. And I think a lot of folks don't think about rural places. What they are thinking about being closer to, you know, larger research institutions or larger metro areas. So again, in rural places across the country, development folks find that we need to do a lot to build on our own assets and create things. Ohio University has been really effective at working on tech transfer, where research that's developed at the university is able to spin out into businesses, some of which have stayed in the region and are some of these world-class businesses. There's a facility in Athens that came out of research at OU, and they are partnering with NASA Glenn. They're running research on using Stirling engine technology for deep space missions. And you don't necessarily think of that when you think about Appalachian, Ohio, but there are some really great partnerships. But you know, when we want to build things that will stay in the region and not be quite as mobile and pull up roots and leave people behind, it, a lot of that comes from people getting creative about what we can make ourselves.
So as I was planning this show, I probably came across a dozen or more agencies or nonprofits or groups that I could have invited in. And clearly from hearing from you two, I picked the two good ones to help tell the story. Two good ones to help tell the story. But who's in charge? Is there somebody that has the master plan that's going to tackle these challenges and make life for the next generation better? Mike, is somebody on point?
So there's not, I wouldn't say there's a hierarchy. Everybody kind of has their area of specialization. We're really in kind of an industrial development organization. You know, Rural Action's more asset-based, developed grassroots kind of development. Ohio University's doing tech transfer. We've got entrepreneurship folks at Ohio University. But to get to your question, we are going to launch a strategic plan. Actually, we're kicking it off this month to look at the overall picture. What are we doing well? What do we need to do better? What are we not doing at all? And how do we collaborate to get that done? And so that's one of the things we're doing to try to weave together the different pieces.
Yeah, and I think that there's a pretty decent ecosystem and practice of collaboration and partnership in the region. I think that everyone who's involved in economic development work tries to help businesses and entrepreneurs find the right door. So whoever they go to, we have a sense of who does what, who has different expertise, and we try to connect people to the resources they need to develop their vision and strengthen their business.
Give me a little bit about the differences or the desire to attract both these large, big, high levels of employment companies and boost the mom and pops, the business startups, the entrepreneurs.
So I think what I can talk about best is the whole idea of developing value chains, because I think that some of the mom and pop stuff can lead to much larger scale if we develop infrastructure and support that. So we have a produce auction with hundreds of producers who are growing food and selling there. And we have engaged those producers for farm to school. And we recently brought a truckload of fresh local produce from southeastern Ohio up to Ohio State University's dining hall. So developing that access to markets can help scale up some of that stuff.
I want to follow up on this and that whole value chain system that might help things in southeastern Ohio. Debbie Phillips of Ohio Rural Action, Mike Jacoby of APEG. We'll be back to talk more with both of these folks in just a few moments on Town Hall Ohio. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We're looking into the economics, the social aspects, the environmental aspects of living and hopefully thriving in Appalachian, Ohio. Debbie Phillips is with Ohio Rural Action, and Mike Jacoby's with the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. So Debbie told us about a produce market that's starting to develop and may become, most small business person's dream is to become a big business person. Mm-hmm. It's working there. Mike, all of these things that we're talking about and you folks are trying to get done, give me an example of that says it can work.
So just this year, we've had, we've provided incentives to help an Indian company restart the rolling mill and electric arc furnace in Mingo Junction in Jefferson County. That's going to create 400 jobs in total. We've helped other companies, a bourbon barrel plant in Jackson.
They've been there.
Yeah, got over 100 employees now. Corvac in Highland County, an auto parts company that we helped bring that company in and incentivize that. Athens Mold and Machine restarted in Athens, making tire molds. We've assisted that project. We've gotten $19 million to help revitalize brownfield sites for future reuse. We've got one gas-fired power plant built tied to Utica Shale, and we've got three proposed. Those plants are $500 million to $1 billion investment each. And the big project is, and it's not final yet, but we're working with PTT Global Chemical and Daelim from Thailand and South Korea to build an ethane cracker in Belmont County. This would be an $8 billion project. We expect the final investment decision early next year, and it will be hundreds of jobs and a huge investment in our region.
Debbie, a couple of things that you've seen that show that these efforts work?
So, you know, one of the things that we've been doing in trying to address some of the ecological issues is work with businesses to expand their social impact as well and try to connect into things. So I mentioned the food that we were able to send up to OSU. We've also worked with Ohio Health Oblenis, which is our local hospital, and they're doing some local food purchasing as well and serving that in the cafeteria and in the patient rooms. We worked with them on a sustainability plan overall. They've reduced their solid waste stream from 6 dumpsters down to 3 after working on a pretty lengthy planning process. And they've changed out all of their lighting for LEDs, and they think it's going to save them $1.5 million over the next 10 years. So those kind of efforts where our zero waste program may start small, working with some local businesses and doing educational programs, have the potential to scale in ways that help businesses and organizations in the region be more efficient and be more connected to the rest of the community. That local food purchasing, if we work with producers to help them grow for institutional buyers, and we work with buyers to help them buy local food, it strengthens that web throughout the community so that people can have that higher quality of life and make a living doing what they love.
We're fortunate that among the many folks that listen to Town Hall Ohio, we have a lot of policymakers, whether in the administration, the new administration coming in. We've got a new General Assembly coming in. 30 seconds or so, Debbie, for those that sit in decision-making positions here in Columbus, what's the single biggest thing they could do for Appalachian Ohio?
I think we need investment in broadband, and I think we need access to flexible capital for the potential for investment in the region. I think we have limited access to capital. There's some kind of startup funds available, and then there might be people who are ready for venture capital, but there's an area in the middle there where it's really tough for people in our business to get, in our region, to get the investment they need in their businesses to grow them.
Mike, public policy step, what's one or two that would really help?
I would agree with broadband. Greenfield site development. We have tools for brownfield site development. We don't have tools to fund greenfield site development. I mean industrial sites and spec buildings. So House Bill 695 would actually bring back the Rural Industrial Park loan. We'd like to see that happen. And incumbent worker training. Workforce is a huge issue everywhere. That's been shown to be very effective. More money so that companies can help train up their workers to higher skilled jobs.
One more time, if folks would like to learn more about Appalachian Ohio and the efforts your organizations are putting forward, Mike, where do they find you?
www.apeg.com.
And Debbie?
www.ruralaction.org.
Thank you both. This was very interesting, and maybe in 5 or 10 years we can come back and have a whole lot more success stories to tell. Our guest today on Town Hall Ohio, Debbie Phillips. She is the CEO for Ohio Rural Action. Mike Jacoby, president of the Appalachian Partnership for Economic Growth. Thanks to both of you for being here, and thanks, as always, to everybody for tuning us in on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.